Cloud. Okay, so welcome to our ERC Elite module call for this month of April 2020. And this month's topic is the reproductive hormones, the reproductive hormone health. And there's a lot here, and I know we all have reproductive hormones. They're all in a different state of, you know, of functionality, right? Like, where are they? Are they premenopausal, postmenopausal, et cetera? But understanding how the reproductive system works, I think, is a really cool thing for everybody to know, regardless of what stage you're in. And also knowing how to assess it to know if it's going right or wrong. So if we go into the modules, you can skip the getting started because you're already in. That was in case we ever offered this as an external program, which we have never done. So we're going to start by assessing, and we have a PDF for those of you who prefer the PDF, but we also have the online hormone assessment. And what we just basically pulled out was the female and the male. There is a big hormone and gland assessment that includes these, but this is so that if you wanted to just go back and reassess just these parts, you could. And then you don't have the male questions to deal with on the female one and vice versa. So you fill it out. And I would recommend that right now, just take, you know, after this call, just take a few minutes. It's not going to take long, just to see how your reproductive system rates. And then let's go through some of the steps in here and see if some of that stuff helps bring you back in balance. We also put in here to go back and do the assessments of the nutrients, because so many of these nutrients are really critical for reproductive hormone health. And then if you need lab tests, which, you know, your coach or I will tell you, yeah, it's a good idea to do it. There's the Dutch test complete. There's a Meridian Valley stool test, which is similar to the Dutch. And quite frankly, I haven't used recently since the Dutch came out, because it requires a 24-hour urine collection. Which, if those of you who've done 24-hour urine collections, they're not, I don't get very good compliance with that. They also have the Ultimate. They have several of them at Meridian. There's the Diagnostics, has the saliva test. They have a premenopausal where you're doing it all throughout the month to see it. They have a menopausal, and then they have a male hormone. So those are all the saliva. So those are the options for getting your reproductive hormones tested. My favorite right now has been the Dutch. I just really get lots of good information, and I get all the metabolites similar to what this Meridian Valley does. But again, it's just having to collect a 24-hour urine sample. And the Meridian one doesn't, that's what the Meridian doesn't have. It says comprehensive, but it doesn't have as comprehensive the cortisol and all that. So that's why I prefer the Dutch. All right. So that's that. And there's no video or anything there, but when we go to part two, we have a video. And, you know, I believe that we tend to, when we understand how our bodies work, we tend to be able to take care of them better. I hear that from all the people in ERC. I hear that from people I do private coaching with. I know a lot of my colleagues say, why do you teach people all this stuff? They don't care how their body works. They just want you to tell them how to fix it. And in reality, I haven't seen that to be the case based on especially you guys who I see on the calls. When you know how it works and why you should or shouldn't do something, you're more likely to do it. All right, so we've got a video here and the slides. I'll just take you through the slides. And some of this might get too geeky for you. And some of it, you'll just like be swooning over. Yay, I like to learn all this stuff. There's interactions of hormones with everything, right? Our nutrients, our food, our stress, our environment, digestion, sleep, other hormones. So it's really important to understand that. And so let's go into a little bit of the biochemistry and physiology. I'm not going to go through this whole presentation. I believe if we look at how long it is, it's probably like 50 minutes.
Hello?
Yep, 49 minutes. So it's pretty long. So there's a lot of great information in there. So hormones, we know hormones affect everything, right? And we've been working with like the hormones that affect the reproductive, the blood sugar balancing, the hormones that affect the digestion, the hormones that affect thyroid and adrenal, and the reproductive hormones are one of them. There's all kinds of interrelations between them. So I highly recommend that you listen to this video and get more detail. But now we're going to talk about the reproductive hormones. We've got the female and the male. And we think about estrogen and progesterone as being the female hormones. And then the males are testosterone and DHEA. Now, here's the deal. Usually when I say hormones, I like to help people with hormones. Everybody's minds go to the bedroom, right? It's like, oh, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. In reality, those are a little small batch compared to everything else that we've been looking at. So here's a picture. Some of you have seen this picture. Some of you are going to go, ah, when you see this picture. And some of you are going to go, ooh, that's really cool. Tell me more. And I do tell you more in the video. But basically, the thing about this is cholesterol, the bad guy, is actually the precursor to all of these hormones. And I tried to do this in a way that made sense. So the male ones are blue and the female ones are pink. And then the kind of like intermediates are all this kind of tan color. Cortisol is bright orange. And then cortisone is a different color blue, and aldosterone. And aldosterone controls like urine retention. But here's the thing. This is one of the reasons why you might crave salt when your adrenals are in fatigue, is because that this whole process is affected and the aldosterone levels shift so that you're thirsty all the time. You're peeing too much and you're getting rid of a lot of your water, which gets rid of a lot of your sodium. The only thing I really want to point out here, and you'll, like I said, we go into major detail on the video, is that cortisol can steal away the precursor, pregnenolone, from your sex hormones. So a lot of people jump in and they see sex hormone imbalances and they go, oh, take this bioidentical, take this and that. But if you don't address the stress levels and you don't address the cortisol, no matter how much of this estrogen or progesterone you give, your body's still going to be stealing and you're not going to be getting the full benefit of that. So we need to make sure that we're balancing the cortisol production. And we do that by managing stress and taking our heart math breaks and meditating and doing yoga and doing things that you love and having fun. We also can manage it via some of the elixirs we've talked about and some of the herbs and stuff. So that's what that looks like. It's a complicated pattern. And it's not just a matter of, oh, DHEA is lower, testosterone is lower, estrogen. There's three different estrogens, the major ones, E1, E2, and E3. But then, as we know, when we go through Dutch tests, there's all these other metabolites, and it's super important that we keep the metabolites safe. So I went through the hormones that control it, and you can listen more about it. But basically, the control of reproduction is not down here. It's up here. It's up here. It's in the brain, the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland. And the hypothalamus produces all of these controlling, releasing hormones to tell the other glands what to do. Gonadotropin releasing hormone is the one that's important here in reproduction. So gonadotropin releasing hormone tells the testes and the ovaries what to do. It basically actually tells the pituitary what to do. And then the pituitary produces this thing called follicle stimulating and luteinizing. And these are important for the reproductive cycle, but they're also important for other functions. And in males, they're important for sperm production. So it's not just females. When someone starts to go through menopause, one of the things a doctor says, oh, I wonder if you're menopausal, let me test your FSH and LH levels. And when they do that, they go, oh, your FSH is really high, your LH is really high. That means you're going into menopause because the pituitary is having to work really hard to get your ovaries to produce the hormones, right? So that's what's important here. But it also, these are affecting the male in terms of the testes and the production of the testosterone and sperm. Okay. This is a little bit more detailed than I want to get on this call, but I want to just pre-frame you for what to look for and listen to in the video. We talk about estrogen. Related breast cancers, right? The hormones that you can lead to breast cancer. But there's actually the receptors are very important as well. So the receptors on all your cells are what take the hormone in, whether it be estrogen or progesterone or thyroid. And the estrogen receptor promoters, that the estrogen has the two, the beta and the alpha. And the beta is the safe one. The beta is the one we want to get the estrogen to attach to more so than the alpha. Yeah, the alpha is important. It's important for some of the reproductive functions, but we want to be able to do things that stimulate ER beta. And when we look at that, we look at all the good stuff that we talked about. Do we talk about isoflavones, which are found in a lot of plants, vitamin E, sulfur-containing vegetables, and then the safe form of estrogen, the estriol, will stimulate more of these ER beta. And some of you who have had Dutch tests, you may have seen me say, oh, well, you know, your estriol is real low, your estrone and estradiol are higher. We really want you to have more estriol. So you go and you take some supplemental estriol, and that's going to help you produce more of these ER beta receptors, which keeps you safer and safer. So the alpha is actually, it's caused by excess fat, like excess fat on the body, but also excess fat in the diet, stress, sugar, your hydrogenated fats, your oxidized, thyroid dysfunction, not enough progesterone, whereas enough progesterone will stimulate the betas, alcohol, xenoestrogens, which are the things that pop out of your plastics and dental fillings and all those kinds of things, the poisonous estrogens, low levels of B6, and there's genetic tendencies to all of this, right? So what we want to be able to do is eat and take care of ourselves and supplement in a way that promotes more of this ER beta in the body, right? So these are all things everybody can do. It's inhibited by, guess what, Premarin. So Premarin is dangerous. This is how they usually supplement in the olden days before all the nurses' studies came out, where they supplement women in menopause with Premarin, which is pregnant mare urine. Great. And it actually inhibits the ER beta. So it actually can put you in a place where you're conducive to breast cancer. And synthetic progestins, which are in, guess what, birth control pills, and are given a lot of times when someone's been on the birth control pill for a long time, and then they go off and they're not getting their periods back, they put them on these synthetics. And most of the time when somebody goes to a conventional doctor that says, oh, you need progesterone, they don't give them progesterone. They give them these synthetic progestins, which actually helps to inhibit these ER betas, will, you know, cause more of these ER alphas and more higher tendency to breast cancer. And then the B6 deficiency and brassica insufficiency. So this is all the stuff that you can be doing to help create these really good, strong, healthy, protective estrogen receptors food-wise. Okay. And if you guys have questions as I'm going along, just, you know, pop in and let me know. I want to make this about what's important for you. Any questions so far about that? Is that clear? Yeah. Okay. So there's the three main estrogens. And it's interesting because most people, when they go to the doctor, they go to the gynecologist or whatever, and they say, oh, let's test your estrogen level. They just say, let's test your estrogen. And in reality, when they do blood tests, they usually only test one of these. Usually they test the estradiol. There's three, and they have different ways that they work. Estradiol, estrone is E1, estradiol is E2, and E3 is estriol. And there's probably a picture later where I can just show you that they do interact with each other. But these are secreted not just by the ovaries, but by the adrenal glands. Right? And the ideal ratio is 1:2 with estradiol. So we want half of the amount of estrone to estradiol, because it's really, it's the most prolific in terms of breast cancer. It mostly signals the alpha receptors, the quote unquote bad ones. Premenopausal testosterone can also be converted into excess estrone. And people who have excess of an enzyme called aromatase, we see this a lot in males, but we also see it in females. And we see that the testosterone, wow, your testosterone's so low. Let's just give you some testosterone. But if you have this activity going on where you're converting the testosterone into estrone, you put yourself into a dangerous position and put yourself at increased risk of breast cancer, males and females. Recently, person that used to work with me, she told me that her father has breast cancer. Her father, we don't think about that in males. But when this testosterone, excess testosterone, is converted into estrone, then it increases that risk. And it's really scary to me that there's just a lot of men out there, I'm 55, 60 years old and I've lost my vitality. Let me go get some testosterone. My testosterone's low. And then they take the testosterone and the next thing you know, they're growing boobs. Because the testosterone's getting converted to estrogen, right? So the other one is estradiol. And again, I talk more about this. I shouldn't get into so much detail here, but that's what causes the breasts to start to enlarge and our body shape, you know, as you go through puberty and, you know, we have the deposition of fat around the hips and all that, but it's also important for mental health. And when we have too low of an amount, it can be a problem. So a lot of times people, when they're estrogen dominant, are actually estrone dominant. And when they're estrone dominant and not enough estradiol, then they can, it has to do with bones and memory and sleep and protection when it's balanced. So this is one that's an important one, but estriol is the protective one. Dr. Jonathan Wright, who is major researcher in bioidentical hormones, and he talks about estriol is the forgotten estrogen. It's the one that is so protective and so helpful. Of course, you need all three, but estriol is important. So whenever there's a risk of breast cancer, whenever there's somebody who's had breast cancer and doesn't want to get it again, whenever there's a tendency towards any kind of cancer, the estriol is a safe thing to take. People say, well, I can't take any kind of estrogen replacement because I have this family history or I've had breast cancer. And it's actually not true, because this one actually protects both the breasts and the uterus, and it protects DNA, and it's a metabolite of the others, but it tends, because of, when we look at that other pathway, interfering factors, most people end up with too little estriol and more of the others. And we want to get in there and help get it balanced. So that's E1 and 2 and E3, and it mostly signals those protective receptors. So this is a picture just to show you the different interactions. We've looked at this on Dutch tests. Again, this might be too geeky and too detailed for some of you, and other of you are like going to sop it up. But estrone, right? Androstenedione is a metabolite of testosterone. So when testosterone gets converted into estrogen, it gets converted into estrone. Okay. With estrone, will go downstream when it's trying to be eliminated into 4-hydroxyestrone, which is a dangerous metabolite. We need to keep that in balance. Dutch tests will test you for that. When somebody's deficient in magnesium, we're going to have more of that estrone converted into 4-hydroxy. There are also some genetic factors, right? The CYP1A2 is one that is a genetic tendency to produce more and not be able to get rid of the 4-hydroxy. The other way that the estrone can go is into estradiol. Okay, the estradiol is, the estradiol will be helpful. Well, the estradiol has all those things I just talked about. Part of that estrone will go down to 16, which is a dangerous metabolite, but also protects against bone loss. So it has a double-edged sword. So we don't want that to be too low, but if it's too high, it increases the risk of cancers. So the things that interfere with that the things that promote estrone to go down to 16 is the obesity, hypothyroid, pesticism, cimetidine. That's the ones that, the red is, it increases that pathway, which is great, but we want to get that to then convert to estriol. So we want to be able to convert the estrone down to 16-hydroxy, but then the 16-hydroxy gets converted down into estriol, which is protective. But if we're not, don't have enough iodine, we can have a problem with doing that. And so that's why I see a lot of people, it's like, okay, let's look at iodine consumption. Let's look at how much iodine we have in the system. And then the two is the protective metabolite. And the estrone can go down that pathway with the right kind of environment, right? So DIM, diindol methane, which comes from, it's related to indole-3-carbinol, but where does it come from? It comes from cruciferous vegetables. So eating more cruciferous vegetables will improve the conversion to take it away from being proliferative and damaging to being protective. And things like exercise, flax, soy isoflavones, omega-3s, and the right amount of progesterone. So it's super important, and it's inhibited by pesticides, alcohol, and a high-fat diet. So when we look at the Dutch test, these are the kinds of things we're looking for. So this is just an overview. Sorry to get into too much detail. I like to geek out on this stuff, but you have control is what I really want you to know. You have control over this to an extent, and then your genetics plays in. Important that I've always talked to anybody who's done this a test is that your E3 should be greater than or equal to your E1 plus E2. And when that happens, you're going to be in more of a protective mode. And when it's not, then you want to help your body with these lifestyle, diet, and supplementation strategies. So I'm going to stop there for a second because I don't want to lose you. And if you did get lost, no problem, because if you don't understand it completely, at least you know there's some rhyme or reason to what we're doing there. Anybody have questions or comments?
Yeah, the slide above there where you just were, the high fat diet. So,
what defines a high fat diet, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Those of us who are, you know, lower carb and are eating higher fat, does it matter, you know, what kind of fat in your...
Yeah, I need to update that. It does. It's processed fats, saturated fats, omega 6 to 3 imbalance, like too many omega 6s versus omega 3s. And it also the fat, like if you look at the way that people typically teach to do a keto diet, what they're doing is they're saying 80% fat, lots of oils and lots of this. I don't see that the whole food plant-based fats are going to cause any problem here. I haven't seen any evidence, any studies to that effect. But as soon as you make oil from a fatty food, you run the risk of oxidation and oxidative byproducts, and that causes problems there. So yeah, it's a great question, like how high is high? But I don't think with what we're doing or what you're doing, it enters that realm. But if you start to like add olive oil to everything and add lard to your food and the kind of things that the typical keto type approach does, I think that's problematic.
Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like, what is high fat for you? It may not be high fat for someone else. So what, you know, if we're looking at your test and we're like, wow, your 2-hydroxy is so low and it's not going up. Let's play with your fat. You know, it just gives us like, maybe we'll lower your fat a little bit and see if that helps. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Because I know for you, I think it was the estriol that was low. I don't remember your 2-hydroxy.
No,
I think
you
had a decent level there. But I don't remember. I've seen so many of them.
I just remember things were better with the last
time. They were much better this last time. So it was much, much better. Donna, yeah.
So on that same slide, so what decides in your body whether the estrone goes to the 4, to the 16, or to the 2?
If you don't have enough magnesium, it can't go down to the 2. It's going to go down to the 4, right? If you have good amounts of these cruciferous, like the sulforaphanes and things from the DIM and the indole-3-carbinol and broccoli sprouts, if you're exercising, if you have some of these other factors, good omega-3s, progesterone, it's more likely to go down this way. And if you're doing heavily pesticided foods and alcohol and the fats, then it's going to be more likely to go down the pathway to the 4 versus the 2.
And then what makes it go to the 16?
Yeah, and it goes through balance. So it's, again, some of those similar factors. And there's some genetic factors as well. So again, pesticides. So pesticides prevents it from going to the 2 and makes it more likely to go down to the 16.
Is that the only way to get to estriol?
Is through the 16? Let me pull up a Dutch test, because my recollection is that there is also a pathway from estradiol to estriol.
Okay.
And it's controlled by the 3.
I was like, well, why?
Well, yeah, you got to get dangerous before
you. That way, if you can't ever get to estriol.
Can we take a different route? Do we really have to go on the dangerous highway? I hear you. Let me just look. You have one recently. Can I open yours?
Yeah.
Donna Thomas Lads. Okay. And you had your Dutch test. All right. Cause I think that I need to update that slide. Because there's a,
cause our goal is to get estriol, right?
Yeah. So the estriol, right. We'll update that slide. I have to update that slide.
Okay.
It's an old slide. But yeah, you can go from estradiol to estriol. But if you have a SNP, like a lot of people I've looked at have either a heterozygous or homozygous SNP, CYP3A4, it's going to be less likely to produce this. And that's where those people are more likely to do well with some kind of supplementation there. Mm-hmm. Right, this 3A4. The 3A4 comes in.
Because I remember that the 4 was higher than it should be.
Yeah, your 4 is higher percentage-wise than it should be. By quite a bit. Yeah, yours is 14, right? So for you, it's promoting that other stuff to go the other way, you know, with more cruciferous and less sugar and You don't do alcohol, making sure you do organic and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I always do organic, but the high fat is probably my problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can always tell, too, like, it gets these little brown spots right here.
Oh, yeah.
And when you have too much of that bad fats in you, and then your bad cholesterol is getting higher, you get this, like, brown spot in here.
Yeah, so that can also be the bad estrogens as well.
Yeah.
Be the bad metabolites of estrogen as well. Yeah. Yeah, good question. Where did it go?
Thank you.
Oops. Where did it go? Can't find it. Where did I go? Did I go? Oh, I'm. You know what? I might have just gone backwards to your test. Where's your test? No, because I went from here to get to your test. Okay, help. I can open it again, but I had it open. There we go. I must have scrolled backwards. I don't know. All right. So, yeah, I'm going to make a note to myself to fix this chart, because it's sometimes I look back and I'm confused about how estrogen.
So does that also mean that I am low in magnesium? Does it automatically, because my 4 was too high?
It could be. That could be one of the problems. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
This chart actually makes it much easier to understand than the Dutch test itself.
Does it? Okay, good. Well, I just want to update it with the right, you know, and make sure I have that the estriol is not just down there, the estriol is here. Because this is actually wrong. I think the estriol is here and then it goes here. I think when I put this chart together, I got my angle, my little, you know, in PowerPoint, my little arrows in the wrong direction, but I'll fix it. I think these get reversed. Estriol is here. No, but this goes to estriol. I'll fix it. I'll make a point of that. All right. So your liver is super important. So if you're killing your liver with all kinds of exposures, then it's less able to deal with making healthy conversions of these estrogens. So it's P450 enzymes, and those when you look at the gene test, the CYP450 is what that's really says. CYP, and then there's a bunch of different ones. Cytochrome P450 is what that's for, CYP. So that's phase one. And then phase two, there's all these others that are important for estrogen metabolism. In the phase one, one of the ones that's super important is CYP1A2 and 1B1. And those have to do with caffeine metabolism and estrogen metabolism, which is why I've told a lot of you, you know, you have this SNP here. If what you're doing is drinking a lot of coffee, you know, a lot of caffeine, you're decreasing your body's ability to handle the estrogens, right? And you're going to produce more of the 4-hydroxy, and you can't get rid of it as much. So it's really important to look at those factors. And then phase two, so these are the ones that metabolize estrogen. There's a lot. There's 6 pathways, and then there's 3 of them in phase two that are determining your estrogen. So sulfation, veggies are important for it. Methylation, B vitamins, minerals, and veggies. Glucuronidation is the fastest, and that's important gut health. So if your gut's out of balance, you're not going to be managing these estrogens as well. And you're going to get a buildup of the toxic ones. So how do we keep your estrogen safe? What do you do to keep it safe? Well, you got to get rid of some weight. The excess weight really has a lot to do with it. Got to get the insulin levels under control, getting your insulin levels down to ideal. Fiber, transit type, all those things I listed for supporting the ER beta with the cruciferous vegetables and the B6. Normalized thyroid function, decreased stress, support adrenals, optimized cortisol, decreased exogenous exposure. So not eating foods that have been, you know, stored and heated in plastic containers, or drinking water from plastic water bottles after they've been sitting in the car, and the heat causes the estrogens to get into the water, and the diet and nutrients. And we'll go into more of these in the other presentations, but super important. So my feeling about this is, if you're having estrogen type symptoms, estrogen imbalance or testosterone imbalance symptoms, and the typical approach in medicine is to just go right there and say, okay, what is it? Here's some supplementation. But really, it depends on the function of other glands and organs. So the stress levels are important, the cortisol levels, the thyroid function. And that's why we stress so much, really supporting each and every one of these. And that's why our core programs in ERC are blood sugar, gut, adrenals, and thyroid. And then we get more advanced and go here. So we want to get those things balanced in order to be safe. And then how do you speed up the excretion of those metabolized hormones? So you got to keep your bowels moving, right? You can't have constipation and expect to be able to get rid of toxins. You know, the friendly flora, increased metabolic rate. So exercise and, you know, good consumption of oxygen, optimizing all the hormone ratios, you know, the pancreatic hormones, the thyroid hormones, liver detoxification pathways. So, you know, sometimes just having liver detox herbs and teas and things like that, and foods, you know, dandelion and hawthorn berry and burdock root and milk thistle and other things that support that liver in detoxification. We have a whole session on liver detoxification. Methyl donors, right? Making sure you have adequate amounts of B12 and folate and B6, not so much B6 for the methyl donors, but the folate and the B12 are super important. Sulfur-rich foods, which includes the garlic, the onions, the brassicas, antioxidants and nutrients. And if there's one or two of these on you don't tolerate because you can't eat them because your body's not processing, you don't have to do all of this. These are just some ideas for speeding up the excretion of those dangerous metabolites. So Donna, these are the things we've been working on, right? To do these things to help you get those things down. Progesterone, super important. You know, progesterone is important for good sleep. It's important for, you know, if you're pregnant, it's maintaining the lining of the uterus, producing in the menstrual cycle what's called the corpus luteum. After the egg's been released and then it hasn't been fertilized yet, it's producing hormones and it maintains this corpus luteum to maintain the pregnancy. So that's what progesterone is really, really important for. And it's disrupted by a lot of the antiprogestins in the environment, which are all those things in the plastics and dental fillings and things like that. Okay, so it's very often overlooked, the resistance. We talk a lot about insulin resistance. You hear people talk about leptin resistance, but not a lot of people talk about progesterone resistance. And progesterone resistance is, it does happen and it's important to know about. Okay, so these are all the functions. You can listen to the tape and the audio and understand these, but mainly it's calming in the body. It helps to build bone. So if you're in menopause and your progesterone levels are super low, you're going to need to get them up. We don't want to be in estrogen dominance. We'd rather be in slight progesterone dominance or balance between them. Cyclical migraines. So if you're having this, it may be progesterone, right? I know we talked about that, Donna, and you've tried taking progesterone. It didn't really necessarily help, but it could be related there.
It actually caused more migraines.
Yeah.
Any kind of progesterone or progesterone.
Any kind. You've taken a lot of different ones.
Yeah. Even the compounded, just any kind of progesterone gives me migraines.
So it's throwing something off. Right. There's signs of progesterone deficiency, right? So some of you have some of these and some of you are past that, right? Hair loss, especially male pattern. A lot of times we blame that on too much testosterone, too much DHT. But in women who have low progesterone, you could be having some of that hair loss that where the pattern, you know, especially where the hairline's starting to go backwards. And again, I can't go through all of this because it's a whole hour and I want to get through the rest of this, but it's all in the video. So I really want to encourage you to watch it. These are some of the things that help progesterone. Chase berries. It's also called Vitex Agnus Castus. It's a supplement you can get. You can get the berries or you can get it as a tincture. B vitamins, calcium deglucarate, and that has a big effect on the gut, and calcium deglucarate can be helpful in helping the progesterone. And then there's also ways to take the progesterone, right? Progesterone cream and sublingual and the topical drops that we have. There's decreasing stress. That's a biggie. It's really an important factor in getting the progesterone under control. This is just showing you the cycle. You can watch the video, but basically there's peaks. You know, you get high estrogen in the middle and then it goes down and then you have high progesterone towards the end. The only thing I would say about this that's important for women in past menopause is that if you are going to supplement, generally, it's a good idea to supplement according to the cycle so that the estrogen would be taken, say, between day 8 and day 14 or 15, right? And then you stop and then you take the progesterone. Of course, we're not trying to have babies, so we don't need to prepare the lining, but it just helps in the body to maintain some of that rhythm a little bit more. Of course, we're not going to be taking enough levels in menopause to cause ovulation, which is what happens at this peak. We don't want that. And, you know, some people would differ, but they want to maintain people's youths until they die. I don't know that it's really a good idea to have a 65 or 70 year old woman who's taking hormones in such a way that she has to risk pregnancy. Like, that's kind of crazy, right? It's nature has its ways to be. But when we have all this environmental stuff that makes the hormones lower than they should be, that creates some problems. So we can adjust it, but we're taking teeny, 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 tiny doses to just give the body a little bit of that protective effect of those hormones. And then males, we're not forgetting about you males. So males have a flow chart. It's, you know, complicated as well. So you've got cholesterol that goes to pregnenolone from that big chart. And then the pregnenolone can go to progesterone, and then it can go to aldosterone and cortisol. We're just leaving that part off. It goes to DHEA from the pregnenolone. And then this intermediate, which is androstenedione, which goes to testosterone. Testosterone can be converted into estrogen. It can be converted into estrone from the androstenedione, or it can be converted from your estradiol to estradiol, which then can go to estrone. So we just have to be careful with hormone replacement is what I'm saying. We can't just give, you know, oh, this person's low in estrogen, let's just give them estradiol. It can throw everything off. This person's low in testosterone, let's just give them testosterone. And in a woman who's estrogen dominant, but low testosterone, the likely reason is not that she needs more testosterone, is that she needs to slow down the conversion from testosterone into estrogen. And that's with some things called aromatase inhibitors. And there's things like mushrooms and nettles, and there's all kinds of things. We run the risk in males of the testosterone getting too much DHT, dihydrotestosterone. And it's very potent, and that's really what would be causing something like a prostate cancer, is when that's too high. Doesn't mean we want none of it, because we need it. It has its functions. But when you look at the Dutch, let me look back at the Dutch and show you. Where did it go? Okay, where was Donna's Dutch test? Okay. No? All right, where's Donna's Dutch test? Thought I looked at it. Ah, there it is. Okay. So when you look here, the testosterone gets converted down, the DHEA to androstenedione. The testosterone can go right to the estrogen or from the androstenedione right there. But this is the enzyme aromatase. And if that's overactive, then you clearly don't have that problem, Donna. But if that was overactive, then somebody with a low testosterone and high estrogen, we want to slow that down. But over here is the DHT. The DHT is on this side, the 5-alpha. This would be the DHT side. And, you know, yours is all about in the same, you know, it's relatively equal from one to the other. But if that was super high, like this went off into this place here, then that the person, you know, would have higher risk of things that are related to testosterone, excess testosterone, like prostate cancer if you're a male. So anyway, that's the story there. And male hormones, you've got DHEA, and males and females need DHEA. And when you're under stress a lot, that cortisol will actually cause the DHEA to go down. But in somebody who's very high stress and high amounts of cortisol that we want to bring it down, we can do it with DHEA. So the DHEA extra supplementation will bring down the cortisol. You got to be careful if you're already low cortisol and you're low DHEA, and then you supplement with DHEA, it might actually bring down the cortisol even more. So there's a lot of little nuances, and it's a matter of doing it and testing it and seeing and adjusting the program after that. Okay, that's it. I think I talked about those, and I think we're almost at the end of that. So symptoms of male hormone imbalance. Have you ever seen a guy like that? There's insulin resistance for sure with that belly, but look at the boobs, right? I mean, most women would like to have cleavage like that, right? It's like, this is the problem. So yeah, in addition to not having a sex drive, they end up growing boobs. They end up with the big belly. They end up with the bald head. A lot of people say, oh, bald head, you know, it's excess testosterone, must be a real virile man. Not necessarily. There's more DHT, but not necessarily everything else is out of balance. So it's super important that we get these things in balance. But you can see that the diet, lifestyle things we've been talking about all along will help these things. And then we can get in there and do some fine tuning when we do the testing. Any questions about that? Did I lose you? Yeah, go ahead, Kathy. Unmute. I'll unmute you. There you go.
Thank you. I typed in the chat, how often do you recommend someone testing the three different estrogens to really get an accurate reading? I have plenty of things to work on and rebuild, you know, osteoporosis and keep the immune system strong after having had cancer. But I don't think this area is an area I'm extremely out of balance or not as well. I probably should go look closer.
Yeah, so that's where the Dutch test comes in. Have you done a Dutch test?
I have, and I love the Dutch test. So,
okay, so I would say, depending on if there's imbalances found that you're addressing, depends on the severity of the imbalances, right? It could be 3 months, it could be 6 months.
Okay.
But I don't think further, if there's imbalances found on there, I wouldn't go longer than 6 months.
Okay. You because we can address them, we want to address them, trying to, like you say, achieve that optimal health, that unstoppable.
We want to get that optimal balance, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Right? And it happens pretty quickly. I think, Paula, what was it, 3 months, 4 months? That you went back and it was a different picture. It really had adjusted itself.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, so the next piece is, now what do you do, right? What are, in more detail, what are some of the things that you can do to address these hormones? So you've got a video there. So let me go back to that other page first, because I just want to see if there's anything on the action steps that I didn't. So focus on eating, you know, your plant, you know all that. Add the cruciferous vegetables, there they are. Get a good balance of omega-3 and 6. Practice mini vacations, reduce toxic exposure, optimize digestion, balance your blood sugar. It's like, okay, the reason I just listed these all here is like, we got to go back to basics. I'm not going to just say, here's this magic pill. Here's this magic herb that's going to get your reproductive system in order. You need to do the basics. These are the basics. So if you're not doing all these basics, be honest with yourself and just go back and say, what can I do to improve this? What can I do to improve my omega-3, 6 balance? Am I doing my mini vacations, my heart mats 5 times a day, or just stopping to breathe, right? This is super, super important for this. The toxic exposures, right? I like to keep the windows open for at least 20 minutes, even in the winter. So if I want to get some air circulating, you don't want to just re-breathe all that stuff, because there's toxins outgassing from every part of your house, your carpets, your floors. So if it's winter, you just open the window. You just don't have to open it a lot. You close the door, you leave, you let it air out, and then you can close it down. I always leave my windows open even this much, even if I have my AC or my heat on, because I want to get that recycling of the air. In the summertime, we get really hot here, but it doesn't stay hot overnight usually, not too bad. So what we'll do, if it is a really hot day, we'll go in the bedroom, we close the windows, turn the AC on, leave, and then come back when we're ready to go to bed, open the windows again, and have fresh air circulating. I have fans in every room. There's a really cool one here. It's really pretty. Look at that. You do the fan. Not a nice fan? Right? I don't have it on right now because I don't need it. But plus it makes noise when I'm on a call. So I don't usually do it when I'm on a call. But we do that in the bedroom, and we just have the air circulating and the window open, even in the winter and the summer. Yeah. Okay. So that's that. And then if we go to the next one.
So at the top of this page, it was talking a little bit further down. It was talking right there, or it says, like, if you're not sensitive to the soy, but I am. So I can't have any of that stuff. So,
well, no, these are all, where does it say this?
Right here.
Yeah, then you just don't do it.
Okay.
I don't do soy at all. I mean, occasionally I have miso, right? Okay. And a lot of people who are sensitive to soy can do miso. But I don't do that, so include it.
Okay.
But assuming you're not sensitive, then you can include it. If not, don't include it. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, it's other ways. Like a huge thing, like you have to have it.
No. Not at all. No.
Right. But I am getting a lot of chia seeds.
You're getting your omega-3s. And make sure you're having good B vitamin, you know, that you're not eating any processed stuff. The sugar actually depletes your B vitamins.
I know. And,
right? Your B vitamins affect your mitochondria. It affects your energy level. It affects your sex hormones. It affects, you know what I'm saying? So the more you keep learning this stuff and thinking about it, the easier it's going to get for you to get, okay, enough with the sugar. This is all the stuff it's doing. I wanted you to have such a vivid understanding that every time you go to reach for sugar, you go, oh, no, I don't want that happening in my body.
My mind knows it.
I know.
My mind really does.
It's the emotional part. You still never took the class with Trisha Nelson last year that we gave you. I don't know if she'll still give it to you, but that would be a good thing.
What was the Trisha Nelson one?
Trisha Nelson is the emotional eating.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because there's more to it than that. Come to the call tomorrow on self-sabotage with Sweet
Spot. Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
I've got Laura coming in and talking a spot. I've got Tony's going to do a spot, and I'm going to do a very specific thing on creating habits that decrease your options for self-sabotage, let's just say.
Okay.
Dr. Rita Marie, do you need to register for that self-sabotage tomorrow? I have it on my calendar, but
no, just come. It's on the same. It's at the same time and the same link as the Sweet Spot calls on Monday.
Okay.
So show up. Yeah.
Okay.
Show up.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So let's look at this. How long is this one? This one is 40 pages. Lots of good stuff in here. All right. Let me see how long the let's see how long the video is. Yeah, it's 47 minutes. So I can't go through all of these. I'm just giving you the highlights because, you know, we'd be here for 3 or 4 hours. So there's a lot of good information in here, but I'll just kind of go through and do the highlights here. The food and hormone balance, the stuff to avoid, right?
I can't tell you how much charred meat I've eaten in my lifetime, not knowing that was so bad.
You and most of us, we had barbecues all the time at home. I got lucky because I stopped eating all this stuff when I was in my late 20s. But I had 28 years of this stuff before I stopped. Mm-hmm. All the stuff you know about. Yeah. The foods that protect the cruciferous. There's the list of the cruciferous vegetables. Try some that you haven't tried before. Right? We do a lot of cabbage. It's easy to get. We do a lot of sprouts. I've been doing those Hamama things now and making my own. I'm actually trying to make sprouts the real way, you know, where you put them in the jar and you tip it over. It's been 4 days and nothing's coming out of them yet. I'm like,
I like the Hippocrates way. It's so easy and you don't need any dirt. And
what is that? Where you just put them in the jar?
No, it's this cool thing. It's like they're just doing the aeroponics or something like that, or waterponics or whatever it's called. Yeah.
I don't know. I've got the broccoli sprouts. I found my bag of them in the refrigerator. Maybe they're too old, but I put them in a jar. I have one of these sprouting jars with the lid with the little holes in it. And I soaked them and then I'm tipping them over and I'm rinsing them. They're not sprouting yet. And it's been since Saturday.
Well, maybe if you do it, the Hamama or whatever you call it,
yeah.
Cause I've done those and I get the little, you know, greens from
I've been doing those. They're very good. Yeah, it's just expensive. It's like $17 a month to get the trays back, and it's 3 of them. And I'm like, well, maybe I could just make these broccoli sprouts from the seeds I already have.
Yeah, just use the sprouts. Use the seeds and do it your own way.
Yeah, I'm trying. Well, I'll let you know how it goes. Maybe I don't remember how long it takes. Maybe they're duds. I don't know. So there's your brassicas, and these are why they have all these chemicals in them. They have indole 3 carbonyl and diindole methane. And of course, a lot of people just go want to buy it. You know, you can buy DIM, you can buy indole 3 carbonyl. And there's times when I will do it, but or recommend it, but I really rather get you to eat all this food and the sulforaphane. And you know the trick about getting more of the sulforaphane from your broccoli is when you cook it, you destroy the enzyme called myrosinase, which converts the glucosinolates into the sulforaphane. But what you want to do, if you're gonna cook them, because I cook a lot of my cruciferous vegetables, is you chop them up first, and then you let them sit for about 20 minutes. The chopping simulates your chewing, and then the myrosinase acts, and it does the conversion, and the sulforaphane is not heat sensitive. So now you have the sulforaphane in your vegetables, and you can eat them cooked. So it's kind of cool. Great for the ER beta we talked about, and the safe estrogen metabolites. And you have to have good gut flora for the sulforaphane to work. So there's a whole thing on that, and I talk about it and give you a link to it. Promoters of increase 2 versus the 16, right? Cruciferous and the isoflavones are super important there.
So flaxseed has isoflavones?
Yes.
Oh.
Yep. The great soy debate. There are so many people. It's such a controversial topic. There's people who think it's death. You know, there's other people who think it's protective. You know, I think it's like there's some places in between, right? I think that unfermented and GMO soy and non-organic soy, stay away from it. But if you're going to eat soy, fermented soy is the way to go. Natto, miso, tempeh, right? That's the way to go because that's where you're getting most of it. When I looked at some of the studies in the books that they say, don't eat soy, it's bad. All the studies they're quoting are with non-fermented, non-organic soy. So it's all a matter of how it responds to you. If it doesn't work well with you, don't do it. But if you are going to do it, then you don't do it in excess. Like everybody in America is like, a little is good, more is better. Let's put soy flour in everything. No, you know, a small amount, a big stir fry with a little bit of a fermented tempeh in it or natto can be very helpful if you tolerate soy. My husband, we don't even buy soy in this house except for miso because my husband's deathly allergic to it. Like his throat closes up and his gut goes down. We don't bother with it. Although my son, when he was living here, we did do tofu because he liked it and he ate a lot of it. So there's the different kinds of fermented soy products. If you're not familiar with natto, Karen Osborne has a little booklet on her site that teaches you how to make your own natto and how to make it taste good. Because I don't like it. There's very few foods I can say I really don't like, and it's not one that I like.
Is that picture the natto?
The picture is the natto, yeah. You won't like it, Donna. No, don't even try.
Tell you, I learned how to make it from Karen.
Yeah.
I agree. You know, it's pretty stinky stuff, but I just keep them all in little containers in the freezer. And when you make it into a salad dressing,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, talk about transformation. And it's a wonderful way to get the K2, you know, to go with your vitamin D. And I was impressed. Of course, Karen is pretty awesome. So I just thought
yes, I think it's
cool what you said.
If you want to try it, do it Karen's way because she's the only person that knows how to actually make it taste good. And she's very particular because she's very good about her bone health after having broken her foot and then breaking her leg. She's very careful about her bone health and she makes sure she gets this every day. But I'll tell you a funny story. One time she was going away on vacation and she'd already made a bunch of it and it was going to go bad and I didn't think about freezing it. She was like, oh, do you want some of this natto while I'm gone? You know, you can just eat it. And I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds great. And I put it in the fridge and I try it. I'm like, I could not eat it. It sat in my refrigerator. I felt so bad. I just couldn't eat it. And then she says, oh, you mix it with sauerkraut and you do this. And it was just so repulsive to me that I didn't bother. But it's so good. I mean, it's so healthy. It's a good anticoagulant, super good anticoagulant. That's where natto kinase, the supplement that's used for lowering blood pressure and anticoagulation comes from. Lignans. Lignans are estrogen-like plant chemicals, and they can be if you've heard of phytoestrogens, you heard of xenoestrogens with the poisonous, phytoestrogens are the ones that are in the plants. And flax and sesame seeds are actually good sources of these. So if you're not going to do soy, these are fine too. Just do the flax seeds and the sesame seeds. Pumpkin seeds also have them, broccoli, beans, and some of those things too, but the highest concentration is going to be in your flax and sesame. Okay. Isoflavones, again, they're estrogenic and anti-estrogenic. So it's not like taking an estrogen supplementation. It goes in there and it's going to push out the xenoestrogens and just supplant and supplant your receptors. So it activates the BER receptors. Sex hormone binding globulin, SHBG, it increases this. So for some people, this might not be a good idea. So it might actually bind up some of your receptors. So if you're estrogen dominant with high levels, the isoflavones, really focusing on them, is a good idea. But if you tend to be low estrogen, you don't want to increase your sex hormone binding globulin because it'll bind up your estrogen and won't make it as readily available. So you got to be careful with these. Let's see, gluten. We all know to stay away from gluten. It has a lot of an effect on the estrogen and the progesterone via the adrenal exhaustion that it causes, the antibodies, the reaction with thyroid, away from it. So here's the fat. We were talking about this earlier from Paula's question. So high saturated fats promote the 16-hydroxyalpha. Omega-3 fats promote the 2-methoxyestrone, the methoxy, which is actually good, protective. Estrogens and omega-3s work synergistically because the estrogen helps absorbing and maintaining omega-3 levels. So it's kind of like when we talk about stomach acid and zinc, right? You need the zinc to make the stomach acid. You need the stomach acid to get the zinc, and they work synergistically. And when you make sure you get both, you end up with good stomach acid production. And omega-3 reduces the C-reactive protein, which causes inflammation of the receptors. And then there's a bunch of nutrients. I just have a list for you. B vitamins, super important. B6 is especially important, but the B12 and folate are as well because of the methylation. And if we look back at Donna's thing here, we go from the hydroxyestrone to the methoxy, and you have to have good methylation intact to do that. Yours is about equal. So we see a lot of difference when people have higher levels. You're just low in general. Your overall estrogen picture is low. But if you saw higher levels of the estrogen here and then lower here, we'd say, oh, methylation problems, right? You're not getting enough of your methyl groups, your methyl folate, your methyl B12, etc.
So I have methylation problems, right?
It's no, you don't actually.
Oh, okay.
No, you don't.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yay! It's always nice when something's working, right? Okay, so B vitamins. B6 is super important. So that's where eating the whole foods and not getting all the pesticides and sugars that block the B6. And the B6 is so super important. Hormone-related deficiency signs.
Wait a minute. So back on that slide. It says things that block B6. So alfalfa seed sprouts, you can't have alfalfa sprouts?
Doesn't mean you can't have it, but excessive, right? Don't have
That's
too many.
Favorite, of course.
That's your favorite? Oh, no. Broccoli sprouts, vary it.
All righty. Thank you.
Yep. So here's some of the things, nausea and vomiting in pregnancy, habitual abortion, infertility. A lot of these things can be related to B6. It doesn't mean it definitely is. C is very important as well. So it's used to make the adrenal hormones. The adrenal hormones are, in that whole sequence that we saw with the sex hormones. And it reduces the incidence of estrogen-induced tumors of the mammary glands, breasts. Vitamin E, super important. Excessive estrogen growth and low levels of vitamin E. Again, we don't want to just supplement lots of vitamin E because there have been various studies that have shown that too much supplementation of E can be problematic, but getting it from real foods, real whole foods, nuts and seeds have it.
every time that I've tried to take vitamin E, I have bad reactions. Even when I have vitamin E with fish oil or something, it just...
What is it? What happens with it? Do you, what symptoms?
It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
When you say it doesn't work, how do you know it doesn't work?
Like, so, you know, I go to the holistic doctor and he tests everything. And at one point, like, in order to do fish oil, he had to do vitamin E as well. So I would take the two of them and I would just get tummy aches and like fish all the time. Ugh. It was just horrible, horrible.
One of the ways to take E is tocopheretrienols. And it comes from rice bran, but there's also this really good book on vitamin E that a doctor in one of my groups put out. And he talks about it from annatto. It's a plant. And it's annatto tocotrienols.
Like annatto seeds used to make something red.
Yes.
Naturally. Yes.
And that has a lot of good vitamin E in it. So that might be something to look at. Of course, your vitamin D, and so many of you are low in vitamin D. We got to get the vitamin D levels up. It's so important to just keep it up, keep it up, keep it up. The minerals, because they activate the fatty acids, they activate the safe estrogen metabolism. They're cofactors, so all of your minerals are super important. Iodine is especially important. We looked at that in the conversion from the to the 16 hydroxy, which is important for bone. Magnesium, super important. We looked at that when we were looking at the 4-hydroxy pathways. The selenium, super important. And not just for the thyroid, but to keep those ER alpha receptors in check, so making them less potent. Potassium, production of progesterone. So this is a good one. If you're, you know, finding that your progesterone levels are low, check potassium. And you may have low potassium because sometimes people rely on potatoes and bananas. And if you're following a lower glycemic diet, you may not have enough potassium. But here's some good potassium-rich foods that, you know, the potatoes, sure, they're going to be high glycemic. But avocado's good, chard, eggplant, unless you're nightshade sensitive, some of the mushrooms, some of the broccoli and the cruciferous. So these are good things to know. And you can print out the slides and, you know, you can bring in a picture of the things you want to make sure that you're getting enough of when you're going to the store or whatever. Like, let me try some of these things. Zinc inhibits that aromatase. Remember we talked before about converting too much testosterone to estrogen. Zinc inhibits that. So zinc's important there. It helps to increase the progesterone levels. So that's good there too. And it's important for growth hormone. So these are all important nutrients. And there's some zinc-rich foods as well. The cool part about some of these seeds is that they're high in a lot of minerals. So we may be getting a lot more of the minerals than we think. And that's where I like to put stuff in Chronometer to see. Other nutrients that are helpful, NAC, which reduces DNA damage by those OH, the 4-OHs, SAMe, methyl donor. But I wouldn't mess with SAMe unless we look at your genetics and some other things and see. And calcium. Calcium deglucurate. And then there's the environmental hormone disruptors. There's all this stuff. They affect the way that the hormones bind to the receptors. And here's some of those ways. Prenatal, some of us are, you know, we're having some problems now because of what mama did when she was carrying us. And I was exposed to cigarette smoke for 9 months in utero. And, you know, that affects it. So exposure to the things that damage it. You know, there's things like there's cadmium and other things in cigarette smoke besides the nicotine and all that can have it. Increasing the miscarriages is having to do with prenatal toxic exposures. My mom wasn't eating any kind of organic food. She was barely eating any vegetables. They all came from a can, probably a tin can, and were contaminated, right? And she smoked cigarettes and so I didn't get a good start, and most of us haven't.
Yeah.
Right? And then coping with them, you know, you got to detoxify, air filters, all that. Lifestyle habits, right? The sleep is super important. The first 4 hours are so, so important. So those of you who say, well, I sleep for 4 hours and then I wake up off and on, at least you're getting those first 4 hours that are going to be the most protective. And then the rest of it, though, is for your emotional. So if your baggage, you know, you're a basket case the next day, it's because your emotional stuff didn't get handled. Melatonin is super important to protect against breast cancer. And then digestion is super, super important, right? We've got to get the gut has more receptors for estrogen than anywhere in the body. Anywhere in the body, right?
I want a smiley face on my tummy.
You want a smiley face on it? Doesn't everybody? cortisol, high levels of cortisol erode the gut lining, right? So we got to get that together. And there we go, exercise. This is me demonstrating various exercises. I haven't done that in a while. I have to get back into doing that. Right.
Taken.
What's that?
When were those pictures taken? Quite a while
ago. They were a while ago. You can tell my bio. Yeah, it was probably 10 years ago. All right. And then we're going to go back to the action plan is to continue the helpful stuff. Add a half an ounce to an ounce of sea vegetables to get every week to get your iodine, the nutrient intake like we went there, avoiding the disruptive foods, getting your sleep, exercise, optimize adrenals, optimize thyroid, and then we're done. So it's nothing, it's more of the same, but it's really pulling it together and showing you some of the specific nutrients that are important. Yeah, no, it's not moving. Okay. I'm frozen.
So when there's all these different nutrients that need to be absorbed properly, so when you have a system that doesn't really absorb things very well, it doesn't matter what you eat.
Well, that's where the supplementation is important, that you have to go to higher levels. It's not, you don't have a system that's not going to absorb any. It's just going to absorb a smaller percentage, and so we have to give it more. That's where some of the topicals, I think I had shared with a couple of you on a thing, that what is it called? Patch MD. And they were having like a 50% off sale. They may still be having it where you can actually wear them. They started out with B12 patches. And I remember buying my son, when he was a teenager, B12 patches. Oops, I'm going to have to, oh, darn. It's going to kill it. Close the program. Start all over. You're probably going to get a blank screen there. Oh, the screen share stopped. I have to get my thing back. Yeah, so the patches can help. Started out with the B12. I'd gotten it when my son was going through puberty, and I thought he had a B12 deficiency based on what was happening. And so he didn't want to take any pills, so I got him the B12 patch. And within a few hours, there was a difference, and then within a few days, there was a big difference. So topically, he was absorbing it. So, but now they have CoQ10, they have all kinds of immune patch, they have a sleep patch, they have all kinds of really cool things. And it's worth trying because you get the nutrients into your system. And then if you tend to not respond well to taking supplements orally because it makes you nauseous or whatever, the patches might be a good way to do it. And we can talk about that on our next call with you, like which ones are available. All right, so if I go back, it came back. If I find it. Where'd it go? Oh, here it is. All right. You see my screen again? Okay. So the next one we're going to look at is part 4. Okay. So some other natural approaches.
This
Let's see. 30 minute one. And we're looking at the causes. We've talked about those all before. Some of the symptoms, and you know, some of you are getting some of these symptoms. Loss of libido, I hear a lot of hot flashes, anxiety. All of these are different hormone imbalance symptoms. You know, excess testosterone. You know, if you're getting a lot of facial hair and acne, it may be that you have too much testosterone or too much of the DHT kind of testosterone. We have hormone resistance. And so, you know, we can develop the hormone resistance. So if you're following a hormone balancing protocol and it's not working, it could be hormone resistance. And you have to look at those receptors. Female hormone imbalances, you know, these are all the kinds of things that can happen. So I just basically, this is something I'm not going to go through right now, because this basically, in different kinds of conditions, what are some of the things you can do? What's some of the acupressure points? What are some of the food specific? Most of you here are not going through PMS at this point in your lives, or dysmenorrhea, or PCOS, but, you know, loss of sex drive. What are some of the things that cause loss of sex drive? What are some of the things for reviving that? The herbs and foods for sex drive. So see some of the herbs, and, you know, most of these are, they're safe enough to just play around with, like, oh, let me just throw some of this in my elixir and see if it makes a difference. The different complaints in menopause. I'm sure many of you have had some of these things: night sweats, memory loss, headaches, bladder control, loss of libido, etc. And then natural approaches to menopause, like most of the stuff we've talked about. But I would recommend you listen to the video, because it gives you some good ideas. Some of these hormones, some of these herbs, maybe Diana knows a lot about some of them, but Dong Quai, which is Angelica sinensis, people think of it as a female hormone thing. It actually works on the liver, and it actually helps with moving some of the estrogen metabolites out. And it's really good for people with dry constipation. You know, and it helps with the hormones. Did you have something to say, Diana? Oops, I can't unmute you. Okay.
Here you are.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm here.
Okay, I thought you had something to say. How are you doing?
Oh, okay. Okay. I just got done with the doctor, so I'm trying to come down.
Oh. Okay, well, I'll talk to you about it after we finish.
No problem.
All right.
I love Dong Quai, by the way. I'm taking it right now.
Are you? What are you taking it for?
Gosh, you know what? I don't even remember. It's been so long since I added it, but I have been taking it for a while now. It just, it's probably has something to do with the hormones. Mm-hmm. I've got so many tinctures out here. Oh, Lordy. And I love the Mac. I've been taking that at night. Black cohosh is lovely.
Yeah.
Red clover is very nice for the heart. I use that in my heart tonic. Mm-hmm. The chase tree, I haven't used that one yet.
Yeah, that's progesterone. It actually stimulates.
That's progesterone, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It's good for progesterone production. Yeah, so these are some of the herbs that we can play around with and see. And then there's bioidenticals. You don't want to take synthetic hormones. You want to take the ones from plants. They have triest, biest, and progesterone, testosterone, DHEA. I don't recommend triest. I recommend the biest or straight estriol, depending on what your substance looks like. I think you're playing with fire when you add the estrone in there, quite frankly. You need a compound pharmacy, except some of them are available, like the DHEA is available from Biomatrix and other places over the counter. Some of the formulations that Dr. Anna Kabeca has, some of the creams have some of these in it. And then you got to be careful about dosing, right? Anytime somebody tries to put you on bioidentical hormones and the hormones are at a level that's too high, it's actually shutting down your own body, because there's something called the negative feedback loop. So it's really important to monitor and to just use the minimum amount. Any of you had a Dutch test and I said, try some of the Estadapt or Proadapt drops, I say, start with one drop. Let's just start with one drop and see how it goes. Yeah. And that's it. So as far as what to do, there's a full action plan, which includes everything we talked about. I have an extra little document that summarizes the things from that part four video into one document. Food allergies are critical and avoiding the allergens. Alternatives for non-essential meds and retest. I recommend retest 3 to 4 months, 6 at the outset. And that's it. That's it for our reproduction module. Any questions? And I do have another, I'm going to check my calendar, but I think I have another call in 9 minutes. Yes, I do.
This is very good and very interesting. The hormones are still very mind-boggling to me.
Ah, yeah.
I don't think I'm ever going to get it all figured out.
Yeah, and when you do, you'll discover something else. But there's a lot to understand. And
yeah, there's a lot there.
It's a lot there. Yeah.
A lot. All right. And it affects so many other things.
Well, it affects everything, but everything affects it. That's the thing. When you look at my pyramid, it's like, if you just start with, oh, you have hot flashes. Oh, your estrogen's low. Here's some estrogen. Bye.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way, right? They're all connected, and we have to be building from the base up.
Yeah.
And every time I have sugar, I get a hot flash.
There you go.
A few minutes.
Clearly it's connected, right? Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, that was happening to me when I quit smoking, and then I would, you know, I would try to have one. Oh God, hot flash, along with all the other symptoms. That was just one of them. I was like, really? I had no idea that stuff was affecting me, my hormones.
Mm-hmm. So not Donna, really. Is a hot flash after you eat sugar a true deterrent? I'd almost think that might end up being a tiny bit of a blessing.
Well, you know, I'm
trying to shift away from sugar.
I'm working on not needing the sugar.
I
finally have
emotional
something, I've been enlightened to something that will help me. So I'm hoping that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. That didn't feel so good. Now I'm suffering for the next 15 minutes.
Well, yeah, and the suffering is not enough of a deterrent for me at this point. So, unfortunately.
True addicts.
Yeah. But shock therapy.
Right with you, Donna. Oh, my God.
All right. Well, I have to go. Is there a password for this? For what? Oh, do you recommend?
Yeah, for Jay.
For what? The module?
Jay's the one who was asking about a password.
Is there a password for what though, Jay? Is it your
the Zoom call?
Oh, how did he get in here to ask it?
I don't know.
But we haven't
seen him the whole time.
He's been on. I saw him on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. The password was embedded in the link.
Yeah.
And we put the password in the email. I thought that's what they told me anyway. They told me that they put the password in there just in case. Like sometimes if you're getting on a phone, you need the password. I don't know. How often do you recommend testing? Okay, I did that. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Dr. Reamer.
You're so welcome. I'm glad. Dinner time at the Paula's.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Donna. Bye, Diana.
So, Diana, did you go to a doctor about the cough?
I did a telehealth appointment.
Okay.
For this, the oxygen levels have been dropping, and although I'm on the mend now, I'm going to get some labs run. Our health fair is not going to happen this year, and that's where I was going to get my panels done, and I need a follow-up. So I committed to, you know, bowing down to the powers that be to get my labs.
But where do you have to drive 3 hours to get them?
Pardon?
You have to drive 3 hours to get them?
Nope. Oh, 1 mile tomorrow morning.
Oh, good. Okay.
1 mile to the clinic. And I'm getting a chest x-ray. So I'm going to see how much damage, if any, has been done so that we can see what we can do about getting my O2 levels back up.
Where are they at right now?
Right now I'm in the 90s and not dropping down. I'm finally on. It's been a long haul.
Yeah.
But I still get very short of breath and have episodes of my O2 dropping down into low 80s,
mm-hmm.
just for no apparent reason. And I've got that heaviness in my chest. So I just want to see, you know, if there was any permanent damage done during this episode. We didn't discuss the COVID at all. We don't have an outbreak here at the moment. And I told
them I've been
isolating since January, so I haven't even been anywhere.
Yeah.
I haven't been in contact with, so I don't think that's what the problem is, but I picked up that respiratory in February.
Yeah.
So I kind of went through the sequence and I told him I've been working with you for 2 years and wow, got to tell him a few things. His jaw was on the floor.
In a good way or not. Like, oh no, which doctor?
I read him off my list of these are the labs that I was going to get. And at the health fair, just, you know, complete blood workup, the chem panel, the CBC, the lipid panel. I need a complete thyroid, and I told him all five of the ones I need. A1C, he actually agreed to do that. I can't believe that one. I also asked for an iron panel, and I said I need iron, TIBC, and ferritin. He agreed to all of this, by the way. I said I need a CRP and a homocysteine. to see, you know, what kind of inflammation this has caused. And I said, no, I will take care of doing the D3 outside of the Medicare. They won't pay for it. Quest charged us $260 for that vitamin D test that they wouldn't
get. You can get a stick prick on $59 on. Yeah,
I know. That's what I told them. I'm going to get that one myself. So don't even bother with that
one. Don't bother because you don't want to get it rejected and have to pay $200.
He agreed to that whole list.
Good job. Well, keep it low. Keep taking care of yourself and rest as much as possible. I'm glad to hear that the oxygen went back up.
Yeah, and Dennis gets his telehealth tomorrow. His labs didn't come in. We were supposed to do them together. Okay. Hopefully we'll get his tomorrow. So
good. Yes. All right. Go for it. Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Dr. Rita Marie, a very quick question. If I make nettle tea with the horsetail thing, if I made a half gallon of it, is it okay if it sits in the fridge for 4 days and I make it just twice a week? It's okay. Okay, thank you. Sorry.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you.
All right, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Feel better, Diana.
Bye, thank you.